We're going to speak about three topics tonight, and I'm going to try to keep the schedule. One is Bhagavad Gita, another is Damodar Leela, and another is chanting of the holy name. Are you ready? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading a verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text number 8. Abhyasa yoga yuktena. Chetasa nanya kamina. Paramam purusham divyam. Yati parthano chintayan. Translation: He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. Nice verse from Attaining the Supreme. This is how to attain the Supreme. Chapter 8 of Bhagavad Gita is teaching, in that chapter, Krishna is teaching how to attain the Supreme. And he gives different scenarios where one doesn't attain the Supreme. You know, when the process of yoga isn't completed, the destination of the yogi who doesn't complete the process. And he gives different options, because there are different options. He may go to the heavenly planets, enjoy for a long time, come back. Or he may take birth in a Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashtam Pajayate and complete his practice of yoga. But this verse is describing how one goes back to Godhead, attains the Supreme. So we're all making a similar endeavor. At least we should be making a similar endeavor. Because the purpose of devotional service is not just to neutralize the pain and become enjoyers in this temporary place. That's not the program. Krishna says in the very early stages of Bhagavad Gita that many people think that. Many people think the purpose of religion is twofold. Enjoy piously in this life, and after this life, get an upgrade. Go to the heavenly planets and enjoy even with greater prosperity. And there's nothing more than this. I'll say it very shortly. I've experimented with different audiences to see if that's how people think. And that's how people think. And I've tried different audiences, not too many, but it's very consistent. Once, the first time I did this, little anecdote. I was, Kadamba Kanada Swami was the temple president, and he had previously been involved in Mayapur with the building of Prabhupada Samadhi, Pushpa Samadhi. And there were some devotees, Pancharatna was one of them, who were assisting him in that service. And when the Samadhi was completed, he was requested to come and become the president in Vrindavan. So he accepted that. And the devotees that were working with him came with him. And he suggested to one of them, Pancharatna, that he goes to Jaipur and starts his temple, because there wasn't a temple there at the time. So I was teaching the VIHE in Vrindavan, and Kadamba Kanana Swami said, can you go to visit Jayapur? There's this nice devotee that started the temple, and he doesn't get much association, so can you go? So I said, okay. So there was this, there was a public program at the University of Jaipur. And it's a very old university with very old buildings. And the hall was like about, you know, half of the width of this, but about as long. And it was loaded with people all the way to the back. So I was at the University of Jaipur meeting people that had never met me and I had never met them. So I just got inspired and said, I would like to ask you a question. I'll begin by asking you all a question. And listen carefully to the question. And at the end of the question, let me know if this is a correct statement. And the statement is, the purpose of religion and the scriptures that teach those that teach religion, Vedic scriptures, is to lead your life in this life in a pious way, following the codes of Dharma, live theistically, religiously, so that in this life you'll accrue piety, and through the strength of that piety, you'll then prosper, and in this life you can enjoy prosperous life in the quality of goodness. And after this life, you'll attain Svargaloka and enjoy long heavenly life in the heavenly realm. How many would agree that that's the purpose of religion? Everyone raise your hand. Everyone raise their hand. Except one person. A young girl sat way in the back because ladies know women sit in the back in India. In our temple, it's side by side, in the back. So everyone raised their hand. They said, does anybody has a different point of view? One girl raised her hand. Brave. Girls aren't supposed to do that. They're supposed to say yes. But she said no. And I said, what's that other idea? She said, the purpose of religion is to teach us to love God. And when we develop love of God, then all our activities are simply dedicated and devoted to serving God. At the end of this life, we attain that kingdom of God, the Krishna Loka. And I said, wow. That's a very different idea than what all these other people say. You must be reading Prabhupada's books. You said, yes, I read Prabhupada's books. But it's right in Bhagavad Gita. It's even Krishna says, not just Prabhupada's purports. Krishna says it. That most people think it's that Veda Vada Rata verse from the second chapter. That most people think that's the purpose of the Vedas. Is what I just described. But Krishna says to reject that right in the second chapter. And one should aspire for that position that's eternal and unchanging. Not the, like this morning's class, not the asat, but sat. One should aspire for sat and reject or not invest value in asat. Or whatever configuration of asat, but one should invest in sat. So here's a verse that teaches the same thing. He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, cetasa nanya gamina, will attain me. For sure, he will reach me. And Krishna says similar things in other verses of Bhagavad Gita, but the reason I picked this verse is Because of the first phrase, abhyasa, yoga. What does abhyasa mean? Anyone know? Raise your hand. Abhyasa. Practice. Okay. So, attaining includes practice. Just like, you know, to come to this hall, even to have the hall. Remember what this place was before? But it's beautiful. But it didn't just like, there was some abhyasa, there was some endeavor. And then, you know, over here. So, it doesn't just fall from the sky. So, the devotional process is also one of practice or endeavor. So now, chanting. What are we supposed to do when we're chanting? Because that's our primary means of deliverance, isn't it? The Yuga Dharma. In this age of Kali. Hare Nama. You know the verse? Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Very good. What does it mean? That's tomorrow's lesson. Your mom will teach you tomorrow. And I'll clue you tonight. But she'll teach you tomorrow. What does Harir Nama mean? What's Harir Nama? Harinam. We say, let's go on Harinam. What does that mean? Nama means name. And name of Hari. By chanting the name of Hari, by chanting the name of Hari three times, by chanting the name of Hari, Eva Kevalam. Eva means certainly. Kevalam. Absolutely. Nothing else but. Kevalam. Kalo, in the age of Kali. Na asti Eva. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative. Gatir. Gati means goal or destination. Anyata. Anya means other. There isn't any other. Chanting of the holy name. So that's our means of deliverance. But, you know, we could take a fast survey right now. How many devotees here in this room, by raise of hands, can say that when they're chanting Krishna's holy name, their mind is completely absorbed in the holy name? Always. Without deviation. That's what the verse says. Constantly engaged in remembering me. Undeviated. Always. We're not there. But that's our means of deliverance. And there isn't something else. So, what to do? What to do? A little anecdote. I've been participating and even more recently leading or conducting japa retreats in America. And one of the second japa retreat I attended was japa retreat for leaders. And not many devotees wanted to come because they were humble and they said, oh, I'm not a leader. I'm not. But the purpose was to give the opportunity for those who have been practicing Krishna consciousness and giving the association to many newer devotees to get the association of other senior devotees who are doing that service. We could associate together and huddle around this one activity that's so important, the chanting of the holy name and how to improve in our chanting. So it was really nice. Really nice. It was such a nice experience. And one of the devotees that attended was Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, who's, you know, a PhD in philosophy when he was young, and very, very capable, brilliant person. He's one of our, if not the best, writer in ISKCON. Really, really solid. So his contribution to our japa retreat was on this word abhyasa. Just, you know, spent 2 hours very brilliantly describing the importance of endeavoring, practicing, taking Prabhupada's phrase, practice makes perfect. You've heard that one. Practice makes perfect. And then another one is, by practice, something becomes second nature. You heard that one before? We have our nature. Just as we read this morning in the Bhagavatam, our nature is impelled by the modes. So somebody's nature may be that they're very gentle. Someone else's nature may be that they're easily angered. Somebody else's nature may be there's different natures. And according to the modes of nature, one is impelled into behaving, just like I described. You take the body of a king, you sit on the throne, you take the body of a dog, and you do things that dogs do, because you got a dog. That's not who you are, any more than the conditioned things that we do is who we are. It's not who we are. But impelled by the modes of material nature, we receive a particular body, and we do particular things. We may not bark and wag our tail. We don't even have a tail. But we do different things that, based upon the embodiment that we have. How do you change that nature? Because we're impelled. And one consideration is abhyasa yoga. Not just practice, but linking with the Supreme. That's like the descending mercy of Krishna. We practice hearing attentively. And what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? From whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, what are you supposed to do? Bring the mind back. How many times do you have to do that? N number of times. Those of you that know mathematics. Infinite, no limit. However many times the mind wanders, you bring the mind back. And you practice bringing the mind back. And eventually the mind becomes accepting that you're going to bring the mind back. It still wants to go, but you bring the mind back. And that becomes second nature. That second nature replaces the other one. The modes of nature where the mind is all over the place. Because somebody was just asking about mechanical chanting that inspired me to speak about this topic. Practice bringing the mind back. Practice bringing the mind to Krishna. But it's not that's also not mechanical. It can't be achieved just by your own effort. So now comes the Damodar Lila part. This is the month of Damodar, right? And I won't do the whole Leela, but the particular part of the Leela that's appropriate, that everyone, when we offer our lamp to Damodar, there's Mother Jasoda, and she's got the rope in her hand, and she's trying to bind Krishna. And I don't know what you make your offerings to here, but commonly it's, you know, Krishna's looking with his big eyes and he's crying. And Mother Jasoda can't bind Krishna. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this Damodar Leela in the following way. Who can bind Krishna? He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Krishna didn't want to be bound by Mother Jasoda. He wanted to go back to the storeroom and steal more butter. Eat more butter and feed the monkeys. That's what Krishna wanted to do. And who is this Mother Jasoda person anyways? He's the supreme personality of Godhead. So Krishna exhibited two of his unlimited potencies, parasha shaktir vividaiva shruyate svabhaviki jnana balakriyacha. Krishna has unlimited potencies in these jnana balakriya categories. Unlimited. Not only in limited number, but in limited in strength. Krishna can't be dominated by anyone. He's the source of anyone and everyone and everything. So he exhibited these two potencies, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. His vibhuti shakti. O Bhagavad Gita scholars, what does vibhuti mean? Opulence. Chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita, in English, it's opulences of the absolute. In Sanskrit, it's vibhuti yoga. Vibhuti means opulences. So Krishna, at the end of chapter 10 Bhagavad Gita, he's responding to Arjuna's question, where Arjuna says, please describe ways in which I can always remember you. So it's very practical. We're in contact with the material energy. And how do we remember Krishna when we're in contact with the material energy? Generally, we get bewildered. Because we're busy trying to be the enjoyers of the material energy. We're little imitation purushas, when in fact we're servants of Krishna. So vibhutis are very prominent excellences amongst the varieties of the material energy. But those vibhutis are just reflections of Krishna's own opulence. Because Krishna is Bhagavan. He possesses bhagas. That's what Bhagavan means. Van means one who possesses. Like Acharya Van, Purusho, Veda. One who has a spiritual master has access to all the Vedas. Becomes the master of the Vedas by taking shelter of a spiritual master. Van. Van, one who possesses. So Krishna is Bhagavan because he possesses bhagas. And bhagas are his great opulences. Parashramuni has identified in Vishnu Puran. He has six principal opulences. You know this. So, in the spiritual realm, Krishna's opulences are called bhagas. And in this material world, they're just reflections of the spiritual world and they're called vibhutis. And chapter 10 is vibhuti yoga. So Krishna exhibited one of his vibhutis. The vibhuti was that the rope, which was larger than Krishna's waist, wouldn't go around Krishna's waist. That's a vibhuti. It's mystical. So Mother Jasoda did the natural, logical thing. She took more rope and tied more rope together. It was still too short. She got many ropes and tied many ropes together. And it was still too short. How was that possible? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna was exhibiting his vibhuti shakti, one of his opulences. And then he reasons, but it's very easy to understand, because within the abdomen of Krishna is everything. Not only the cosmic manifestation, but everything. Unlimited universes, but a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna, Mahavishnu, breathes. From his body comes unlimited universes, and before that it's in a latent or dormant state within his abdomen. And that's Mahavishnu, who is but a portion of a plenary portion. So, what's that abdomen of Krishna? What rope can go around everything? Because the rope is just part of everything, and it can't go around everything. And the second potency that Krishna exhibited was Satya Sankalpa Shakti. So we all know what Shakti is. Sankalpa means intention. Just like when we have our japa retreats, we have a Sankalpa ceremony. We write a Sankalpa, and at the end we have a Sankalpa ceremony. And it's the same in principle as when there's some karma kanda yajna, there's some sankalpa. I want money. Then there's a particular yajna for that. Or I want a beautiful wife, or I want to pass my exam, or I want to something. Whatever that something is, it's the intention of the yajna, that's the sankalpa. So now let's go back to devotional service. And our sankalpa is to pleasingly serve Krishna. But when you're Krishna, what's your sankalpa? He wanted to go to the storeroom and steal more butter and feed it to the monkeys. And so satya, his sankalpa became satya. It became fact and truth. And nothing could stop Krishna's satya sankalpa shakti and his vibhuti shakti. Even your mother Yasoda. What to speak of the devotee that's trying to chant of attentive japa? You know, a sadhaka. This is Mother Yasoda. She couldn't bind Krishna. So what did she do? The other elder gopis, they had been sent by Mother Yasoda, bring all the ropes from your storeroom. I want to bind Krishna. And the other gopis said, Mother Yasoda, they were laughing at her. Don't you understand? It's just not meant to happen. Don't you remember this morning you tied that little string around Krishna's waist and a little bell and it went around his waist very easily? Now you have all this rope. It's not going around his waist. Just accept it. It's not meant to happen. No. I'm his mother. It's my duty bound. I have to discipline my son. It's my duty. She continued to endeavor. There's the connecting point. Abhyasa, or more precisely, prayasa. In any spiritual path, there's some prayasa. There's something that we have to do. Not just chant, not just make a sound. But chant with attention. And when we're trying to chant with attention, it's not happening. That rope isn't going around Krishna. No matter how much effort we make, it's not happening. So what do? You continue to make that sincere devotional effort. So what did Krishna do? Krishna withdrew his Satya Sankalpa Shakti, and he withdrew his Vibhuti Shakti, and he exhibited his Kripa Shakti. He exhibited his mercy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur drills down just a little bit more and says that this prayasa of Mother Jasoda has two parts. Her bhakti, nishtha. You've heard this word, nishtha? What does it mean? Steady, fixed. Nishtha. And the stage before nishtha is anishtata, unsteady. You know, that's what we're doing. Like somebody was describing. Sometimes I'm really, and other times, sometimes, unsteady. But it's what comes before being steady. It's okay. Become steady. But to become steady, there is something that has to happen. You continue to endeavor. With faith. You strive. With faith. You continue to bring the mind back. Because there's an instruction from Krishna to do so. Here's a nice lesson. Within the instructions that Krishna gives, there is the potency to fulfill his instructions. Isn't that nice? I'll say it again. Within, just as with whatever instructions the spiritual master gives, Prabhupada taught this, whatever Krishna or the spiritual master give as an instruction, within the instruction is the all that you need to fulfill the instruction. Isn't that nice? One who has faith can realize that, and one that doesn't have faith doesn't realize that. But it's a fact. Within the instruction is the potency to carry out in all respects the instruction, including this one. Fix the mind upon Krishna. Ooh.
How about another one?
Something that's easier. But we don't need something easier. It's like, you know, there's a pile of rocks over here. Can you please move the pile of rocks over here to over there? Oh, that's a very difficult task. I think I'm going to have to take some prasadam. A lot of prasadam. It's a lot of rocks. Okay, now I've had nice prasadam. I need a little rest. You wake up, oh, I didn't chant my rounds yet. I have to chant my rounds first. And you can find so many other things to do, but the pile of rocks is still there, and the instruction is to take them over there. So however much we may delay the needful still remains. We have to bring the mind to Krishna. And it may, however many times it takes to take this rock and one by one, take the pile of rocks from one place to the other. It remains as an instruction that Krishna has given to bring our mind to Him from wherever it may wander. And one who endeavors prayasa or practices abhyasa, that carrying out that instruction with sincerity and consistently, the ability to do so is within the instruction. So Krishna saw the sincere endeavor of Mother Jasoda. And it wasn't just like, you know, I'm going to get... It was in devotion. It was bhakti, nishtha. Nishtha means steady. Bhakti, nishtha, steady devotion. She was unswerving in her love for Krishna despite the obstacle that the rope wouldn't go around Krishna. And sva nishtha is the other term that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur presents. It's very similar. But she was not depending on something external. She was doing things, more rope and so forth, but it was a determination, a strong determination. Prabhupada sometimes translates nishtha as like strong determination. Like the verse from the Bhagavatam, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. One can attain the Purusham Param, the Supreme Person, if one engages in devotional service with great determination. So Mother Yasoda exhibited that. And my dear devotees, Krishna is also examining our determination. Do you really want me? Are you sure? How about a little distraction? How about a little obstacle? How about a little sense gratification? It's too difficult. Just like Narada did the same thing to Dhruva. Dhruva, you're just a little boy. You should go home. Maybe when you grow up and later you can do this. So he was testing the determination of Dhruva. But he saw Dhruva was very determined. And that determination, plus the mercy of Narada, carried him across the finish line. He achieved the goal. And then when he was on the other side, having achieved the goal, the material portion, just like Vedanta Chaitanya Prabhu's question this morning about fruitive intention, the fruitive intention of Dhruva was gone. Because he was very determined to reach the object, Vishnu. His purpose was very fruitive. I want a kingdom. We may not want a kingdom, but we're fruitive of something. We want something. But when this bhakti means she wanted to serve Krishna. It wasn't for her purpose. It was her motherly affection. And she was very determined. And there wasn't anything that was going to stop her. None of the obstacles that Krishna placed, his Satya Sankalpa Shakti and his Vibhuta Shakti, she was still determined. So Krishna showed his mercy. And then she was able to bind Krishna. So we have this service of chanting the holy name of Krishna. Great lesson when you're chanting japa and your mind is doing its usual non-cooperation program, civil disobedience, non-violent, civil disobedience. You can remember Mother Yasoda and the Damodar Leela, especially this month, where in our case we're following Krishna's instruction and we're following the spiritual master's instruction. We're following the teaching of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the mind is not cooperating. So continue with devotion under the order of Guru and Krishna, with great determination, the kind of determination where it's your life and soul. You know this expression, life and soul, right? Prabhupada used that to say, that's the vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana, where you take the instruction of the spiritual master as your life and soul. How do you have a life without a life? How can you be separated from the instruction of your spiritual master and Krishna? So I must. Sheer determination. I must. And then the mercy of Krishna is experienced. Even a little, even a drop of Krishna's mercy is oceanic. What to speak of the fullness of Krishna's mercy? But we require Krishna's mercy. We require Krishna's mercy to do anything. To get up and walk across the floor and, you know, go to our next activity. We require Krishna's mercy. We're just like oblivious to the fact that we require Krishna's mercy. But to attract the heart of Krishna, as is intended through the bhakti process, to please Krishna, bhakti nishta, we require Krishna's mercy. To effectively chant the holy name, to do anything properly in devotional service, to get our crummy false ego out of the way and be able to serve Krishna purely, we require Krishna's mercy. We require some endeavor, and therefore, but we also require Krishna's mercy. Therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that these 2 inches too short, every time 2 inches too short, represents these two features. The endeavor in devotional service and the mercy of Krishna to be successful in any undertaking we do in devotional service. And chanting is principal and primary. It's our primary means of deliverance, the chanting of the holy name. So make this connection during this month of Damodar, when you're every day of the month making your offering to Lord Damodar. And I want to end so we'll be able to participate this evening. Follow. Don't imitate. Don't try to take some rope and bind Krishna. But take your heart to Krishna and offer your heart to Krishna that I need your mercy to be successful. I want to come to you. You're calling. I want to come to you. On my own endeavor, it's not possible. Let me make the sincere most, utmost effort that I can, and let that capacity increase and increase, but I require your mercy. We can learn this lesson from Mother Jasoda. They have a whole month of practice. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, both in my own and dealing with some others, I'm repeatedly observing that to bring back the mind to the instructions itself takes a lot of effort. And even after somewhat achieving that, how do we cultivate the desire to, intense desire to fulfill that? I have to do it, or I have to fulfill these instructions. What are the factors which arouse the deep sense of intensity to this.
Something's wrong with that microphone. I think I got it. What are the factors that are involved in awakening the desire to very sincerely try to achieve the result, the goal? Um, Well, one of the ones that we all share is we don't like to suffer. And the material world is a place of suffering by design. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's right on the label. So that's a starting point. I don't want to suffer. But then what happens is we engage in devotional service and suffering is mitigated. So we feel, hey, I'm comfortable. I can relax now. A little complacency. I've worked hard. Remember this morning? A little bit of Maya. You don't have to call Maya. She's immediately there. And we're suffering again. So we go through some of that, and I don't want to suffer. It requires being a little tuned in to what is the real desire of the heart, because the conditioned tendency is, I don't mind a little mix. That's life. You take the bad with the good, and that's not what we want. We want happiness that's unbroken, and we want to love and be loved. And that's not what this material world is. Not that such a place. So it takes some sincerity of purpose. So it starts with, we don't like to suffer, but some sincerity of purpose. And Krishna will send the proper association that will carry us to that, you know, the other place, to the spiritual destination. But then there has to be some willingness to receive that association. And, you know, it's true for all of us. At some point, we weren't practicing devotional service, and now we're practicing devotional service. So there's a beginning. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it as receiving the mercy of someone who is a carrying bhakti, and they share that bhakti by their compassion or mercy. Then there has to be some willingness to receive it, because we could say no and continue saying no. So that's like the key right there, is receiving mercy and willing, having the opportunity, having a sincere desire, and then receiving mercy, and or having mercy sent, and then receiving it. Sincerity. Krishna recognizing that sincerity. Krishna sending some mercy and our receiving it. And repeat it. Bear in mind what the goal is. It's not just mitigation of distress. It's achieving a loving relationship with Krishna, restoring our loving relationship with Krishna. Just thinking about your son running around in the back there. You guys used to be like that too, you know. Do you remember? I do. Okay. In devotional service, we say that everything is mercy of Krishna. Then, when each jiva is putting effort or endeavoring to please Krishna, how their effort putting also can be mercy of Krishna. Well, on a fundamental level, our existence is dependent upon Krishna. We ourselves, with the speak of our endeavor, is a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. What to speak of making proper use of our free will and endeavoring to please Krishna instead of something else. It says, that's Krishna's mercy. Did whoever wrote this, do they mean something different than what I just said? I'm not sure. Did you write this? If our existence is a manifestation of Krishna's mercy, however we exercise our existence is a subset of that. And that we properly exercise our free will, that's Krishna's mercy. It's still something from our side. But our existence is dependent upon Krishna's mercy. And particularly, we're in this unfortunate circumstance of the material realm. Krishna's giving us the opportunity to revive our loving relationship with Him by sending representatives and messages and resources to get out of this condition. And we say yes, there's something on our side. But it's Krishna's mercy that that's coming about. Is that all right? Yes? No? Maybe? Okay. Sometimes it is said, while chanting, be grateful. Sometimes it is said, while chanting, hear the mantra. Sometimes it is said, while chanting, pray. Engage me in service of Krishna. Which one is right? And easy. Well, they're all right and they're all easy. The mind shouldn't be like a jumping beam where it goes from one to the other to the other. You take something and you enter into that something as a mood or a meditation. It's like, you know, the 10 offenses. It's not like while you're chanting the holy name, you should be multi-processing what the 10 offenses are, going through them like a Rolodex. Okay, 1, 2, 3. There's a mood. And you enter into that mood. Just like the another one on the list of Shikshastakam number 3, Trinadapi Sunichena. So it's a mood, and by meditation you can enter into that mood. And prayers are simply a way to assist amplifying or drawing from the inside to your awakened state of consciousness, to your awareness state of consciousness, a particular mood of devotion to Krishna. Not exactly a tool, it's an expression, a connection, a linking with Krishna. So any one of them. And what seems to work best for you, that's the one to work with. How to continue chanting good japa when we are going through difficult times because the mind is restless. But generally, when the mind is restless, you're not chanting good japa. But it's certainly possible to be going through difficult times and the mind isn't restless. And that's when the mind has taken shelter. And I described that one perspective on how the mind can take shelter by, I'm going through a difficult time, my mind is restless, but I don't want to respond simply to the external circumstance. I want to take shelter of Krishna. I want to become absorbed in the holy name, even in this turbulent circumstance. And while trying to do that, it's not happening. And I continue to try. So the prayasa or abhyasa. And then I realize my tininess, my helplessness, my dependency upon Krishna for that to happen. That feeling of humility invites Krishna's mercy. And then with that combination, there's shelter. That's good chanting, even in a difficult circumstance. In the morning class, I stated different bodies possess different nature. Is determination also part of that nature? Lakshmikant. Could you explain your question a little better? Yeah? Can you explain it? Is determination part of that nature? There's the gross body.
It's those in mode of goodness and mode of ignorance. In mode of goodness, more determination is there too.
Yeah, with mode of goodness, one can easily undergo austerities or difficult circumstances. And it's fine in the mode of goodness. But in the mode of passion, in the mode of ignorance, there's different kinds of determination. But the modes of nature are competing. So determination will also undergo some fluctuation according to the modes of nature.
Chant. In our endeavor to chant.
Even with chanting, sure. You ever experience chanting and you get tired? Drowsy? Never experienced it, right?
I do drowse, Maharaj. I do drowse.
Okay. That's not the mode of goodness. Not the mode of passion. But it's not that always that mode is there. There's different kinds of determination, even in chanting. When's your best chanting? Is there some particular circumstance, like maybe in the early morning hours in the temple room seated with the devotees, and there's like all these devotees chanting japa, and at least the first half hour. Really good japa, right? And then something starts to happen. At least that first half hour is pretty good, right? Maybe an hour. There's a few people still left after an hour and a half. Maybe you like to sit next to a particular devotee because, you know, they're really something helps you in your chanting. So there may be things that help our determination in chanting. Association is one of them. And contemplating the purpose behind the activity. It's not just like, you know, beating the mind with the holy name. It's absorbing the mind in Krishna. So, as one progresses in spiritual life, that determination should, if there's progress, it should become steady determination. And that means the lower modes of nature, their influence has subsided to some degree. So, to answer your question, yeah, there's different influences of the modes of nature upon determination, as well as other forms of behavior. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrī Śrī Rādhā Dāmodara ki jai, Gaura Prema Nandi Hari Bol.